the arrival of Yisro with the Jewish people caused a great deal of commotion, not only at the time, but also in subsequent generations. For there exists a major discussion amongst the Rishonim as to how to understand the timing of Yisro's visit. Specifically, whether it was before the giving of the Torah, afterwards, and it's a discussion which is in its own fascinating, but also important because it will bring us to consider a number of the psukim in the beginning of the parsha carefully, which is, of course, a very good thing. La'amito shel davar, just in the sake of the fullness of the discussion, this machlokas is developed at length in the works of the Rishonim, but it does not begin with the Rishonim. This discussion actually, or at least the two positions, the two opinions, are to be found in Chazal, amongst the Tanoim. In fact, the famous Rashi, the first Rashi of Parshas Yisro, Vayishma Yisro, Rashi says, Mashmu Ashama Uba. What did he hear? I think in English we can't help but add the word already. What did he hear already that he came to join the Jewish people? Rashi says two things. Kriyas Yamsuf, the splitting of the Yamsuf, and Melchemes Amalek, the war with Amalek. Now, what's interesting about this Rashi, aside from all the Rashi issues, is that Rashi's source is a discussion of Tanoim in Maseches Psochim, Daf Kuf Tet Zayin, and also in the Mechilta on this Pasuk. And there, these two episodes represent two distinct opinions. One opinion, I believe it's Rabbi Elezer and Rabbi Yeshua, one opinion says Kriyas Yamsuf, the other opinion says Milchemes Amalek. Rashi put the two together. Rashi doesn't have to keep it as a machlokas. Rashi can adopt both. But we should know that there's a third opinion in the Gemara there, Rabbi Elazar HaModoi, and he didn't make it into the Rashi. And that is Matan Torah Shoma. That's what he heard. Matan Torah. And there, the Gemara says that part of the discussion as to what it was that Yisro heard is the question as to whether or not he came before Matan Torah or afterwards. Rabbi Elazar HaModoi says he heard about Matan Torah. Clearly he came afterwards. The first two opinions, Kriyas Yamsuf, Melchemes Amalek, to each his own, they do not agree with Rabbi Elazar HaModoi because they don't understand that Yisro came after Matan Torah. He came before, so there wasn't what to hear. And as we begin to consider the various questions and issues with each position, we'll start with the Ibn Ezra. So the Ibn Ezra, as is his way, he'll tell you exactly why he feels his approach is correct. He raises a number of questions, and let us see them. Firstly, says Ibn Ezra, and he is of the opinion that Yisro came after Matan Torah. Why do I say this? First, he says, Ibn Ezra, take a look at Pasuk Hey. Perik Yud Ches, Pasuk Hey. What will we see? Vayavo Yisro Chosein Moshe. Yisro, okay? Uvanav, Vishto, Amoshe, Moshe's children, Moshe's wife. El Hamidbar, Ashehu Choneshom, Har HaElokim. Those two words, Har HaElokim, say it all. Where is Har HaElokim? Har Sinai. The pasuk is telling us that Yisro came to Moshe at Har Sinai. Now, the Jewish people didn't get to Har Sinai until Perek Yutes, Vayis'u Merfidim, Vayavo Midbar Sinai. But the pasuk is telling us at the beginning of Yisro, in Perek Yud Ches, that Yisro met Moshe at Har Sinai. That tells you that these psukim are not in chronological order. Because at this stage in the Chumash, Moshe isn't at Har Sinai yet. No one is. Rather, says Ibn Ezra, it's already after Matan Torah, and everyone is, yes, at Har Sinai, and that's where Yisro comes to meet Moshe. Now, in truth, even if we accept this, and we'll see there is what to discuss, that Yisro comes to meet Moshe at Har Sinai, that doesn't necessarily tell us that he came after Matan Torah. It just tells us that he came when Moshe and the Jewish people were already at Sinai, and they were there for 6 days before the Torah was given. But certainly it dislodges the notion that the Psukim are written in chronological order, because at this point in the Chumash, they didn't even get to Sinai. So that much we've seen. Okay, so that's the first point. There at Har HaElokim, that's where Yisro comes. Secondly, says Ibn Ezra, have a look at Pasuk Yud Beis. Vayikach Yisro Chosein Moshe Ola Uzvachim Lashem. So Yisro takes certain korbanos. Vayavo Aaron Chozikne Yisro Lecho Lechem Im Chosein Moshe Lefnei HaElokim. So Pasuk Yud Beis describes korbanos that Yisro brought. Why is this significant? Says Ibn Ezra, generally speaking, if there is no Mizbeach yet, the Pasuk will always tell us that they built a Mizbeach and then brought korbanos. Here, there is no reference to building a Mizbeach. All you have is the bringing of korbanos. Apparently, we're in a place where there already was a Mizbeach. Where was there a Mizbeach, however? If you read further, we will see that accompanying Matan Torah, there is yet a question, was it directly before, or perhaps a little bit afterwards? Shmos Perek Kafdalad, that's what's called Bris Torah. That's where they built a Mizbeach and they offered korbanos around about the time of the giving of the Torah. Says Ibn Ezra, that tells us that Yisro came at that time. He didn't come beforehand. They would have to build a Mizbeach in order to bring korbanos, and the Pasuk would have said so. But rather, he comes, as we said, to Har Sinai. There's already a Mizbeach built, and therefore the Pasuk only refers to him bringing the korbanos. Okay. What else? Says Ibn Ezra, there's more. Have a look in Pasuk Yud Gimel. This is the famous suggestion of Yisro to Moshe, Vayhimi Macharas, Vayeshev Moshe Lishbot Es Ha'am. The Moshe sits down to judge the people. Vayamota Amar Moshe Min HaBoker Ad HaOrev. And everyone is standing by Moshe. Pasuk Yud Dalet. Vayar Chosein Moshe Is Kol Asher Oseh La'am. Vayome Ma Davar Hazeh Asher Ata Oseh La'am. What are you doing? Not what are they doing to you. What are you doing to them? Madu Ata Yoshev Levadecha V'Chol La'am Nitzav Alecha V'Boker Ad HaOrev. Why is it just you and everyone is standing next to you? It's always fascinating that Yisro, as much as he was a relative newcomer to Judaism, he didn't stay quiet. He saw something he felt was comment worthy. He commented. Vayomer Moshe lechosno ki yavo elai ha'am nidrosh elokim. When people come to seek out God, and what does that mean? It means ki yelahem davar bo elai. If they have an issue, they come to me v'shafatati bein ishu bein re'ehu. And this now is the critical phrase. V'hodati eschukei ha'elokim ve'estarosav. They come to me with shilas, they come to me with issues, and I let them know. Eschukei ha'elokim ve'estarosav. I let them know the chukim, I let them know the Torah. Says Ibn Ezra, you can't let them know the Torah until you've received the Torah. The end of Parshas Bishalach, they haven't received the Torah yet. Moshe, we're already discussing Moshe with Yisro, and Moshe says that when they come with Shilas, so I tell them what the halacha is. You can't tell them what the halacha is until you've received it. And this is further confirmation that Yisro is arriving after Matan Torah. The Torah has been given, Moshe has received it in its entirety, other people yet have not, and that's why he is telling them the halacha as they come to him. These are the three primary points of the Ibn Ezra, which move him to conclude that Yisro indeed came after Matan Torah. They're at Har Sinai, there is a Mizbeach, the Torah has been given, as he has demonstrated. There's just one Shaila. If it happened after Matan Torah, why is it written before? It's a good Shaila. You can say Ein Mukdama Mu'ucha BaTorah. You can say that. But it's nice if you can explain it. It's not wanton. It's not for the sake of it that things would be out of chronological order. Do you have an explanation? says Ibn Ezra, I do. And this is actually a type of explanation that Ibn Ezra will use often. Namely, sometimes events are presented in the Torah not in their chronological order, but rather two events are juxtaposed because they're contrasted with each other. And the contrast brings out a theme in a much more pronounced way that perhaps would have gone more unnoticed had they just followed the chronological order. That is to say, says Ibn Ezra, the beginning of Parshas Yisro discusses Yisro. And what is it immediately following? What is it put next to? Although not chronologically, the war with Amalek. Says Ibn Ezra, the Torah wishes to juxtapose and thereby contrast Yisro's interaction with the Jewish people as opposed to Amalek. To put them zeh l'umas zeh. Amalek heard the Jewish people came out, they came to war. Yisro heard the Jewish people came out, he came to join. And those are two rather different relationships and two different reactions. And it's in order to bring out that contrast, the Torah puts them together. So this is the, in brief, the position of the Ibn Ezra. Now, representing the school of Rishonim, who argue that indeed Yisro came before Matan Torah, as the placing of the Parshas would seem to indicate, is none other than the Ramban. And we should know that there is much to discuss in this specific question, but this seems to be Ramban and Ibn Ezra consistent with their general approach to the idea of Ein Mukdama Me'ucher B'Torah. We find that the Ibn Ezra is much more inclined to use it. The concept exists, there's no question about that. In some places, it's explicit in the Torah that the later event happened earlier. Perek Aleph of Bamidbar is Rosh Chodesh Iyar, as is stated in the Torah. Perek Tes is Rosh Chodesh Nisan, a month earlier, as is stated in the Torah. So there is no avoiding the notion that it can happen. The question is, how often do we understand it is to happen? And here, Ibn Ezra uses it quite readily, and Ramban very sparingly. It seems that the Ibn Ezra had this principle on the table next to him as he learned Chumash, ready to apply. For the Ramban, it seems more that it was behind a plate of glass which said, in case of emergency, break. But wherever possible, the Ramban will seek to preserve the chronological order as in keeping with the order that things are written. And here too, says Ramban, it's written before Matan Torah, it happened before Matan Torah. And what does he say to establish his position? Firstly, and this is before we get to responding to Ibn Ezra's questions, which need to be responded to. But in terms of establishing just the simple understanding, says Ramban, if you read the Psukim, it seems very clear that Yisro did not come after Matan Torah. Why do I say that? Well, let's go back to the very beginning. Pasuk Aleph. Vayishma Yisro, Kohen Midyan, Chosen Moshe, is kol asher asar lekim leMoshe uLisrael amo, everything that Hashem did to Moshe and Yisrael, ki hotzi Hashem es Yisrael miMitzrayim. He took them out of Mitzrayim. Now, even without getting into Rashi and repetitions and such like, look at the words, says Ramban. As we read towards the end of the Parsha about Matan Torah, one thing becomes very clear. It was an unforgettable experience. It impacted everyone. There was nothing like it. Not before, not afterwards. An entire nation having prophetic revelation with the Har Sinai and the whole thing. Says Ramban, it's difficult to understand how, if that had happened, the Pasuk wouldn't mention it. The Pasuk, just in the simple translation of the word, says that Yisro heard everything that Hashem did to Moshe and his people, and he took them out of Mitzrayim. It's very Yitzias Mitzrayim based, which can include Kriyas Yamsuf, it's also part of Yitzias Mitzrayim. Amalek attacked them as they were leaving, but Matan Torah, there's no mention. It couldn't go unmentioned. If it happened, it's the most newsworthy item in the history of the world. It's worth a mention. And moreover, as we see that Moshe tells Yisro about their experiences, that is to say, in Pasuk Ches, Let us see. Perek Yud Ches, Pasuk Ches. Vayisaper Moshe lechosno es kol asher asa Hashem lefaro leMitzrayim. So Moshe tells Yisro the whole story. It's interesting. As Mepharshim point out, this was the first fulfillment of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. He finally found someone who he could talk to who hadn't been there. So he tells him the story. So, kol asher asa Hashem lefaro leMitzrayim alados Yisrael es kol atlo Hashem etzrasam baderech, all the difficulties they had on the way, but tzileim Hashem. So Moshe tells Yisro everything. Everything, once again, says Ramban, same idea, but it comes out more and more pronounced. If the Torah had been given, and Moshe is meant to tell Yisro to bring him up to date, he wouldn't mention the giving of the Torah. It's quite a significant event. But we see that Moshe only talks to him about Yetzias Mitzrayim. It further seems to confirm the understanding that that's all that had happened. We say all, obviously, advisedly, but Matan Torah hadn't happened yet. That's the only way to explain how Moshe wouldn't have told Yisro about it. And as Yisro responds in Pasuk Tes and Yud, Vayomer Yisro, Baruch Hashem Etzer Tzileschem Miyad Mitzrayim Umiyad Paro. Baruch Hashem, so who saved you from Mitzrayim and Paro? Yud Aleph Hatoyadati Kugelo Hashem Mikol Ha'Elohim. Now I know that God is greater than, more powerful than any other deity. Matan Torah wouldn't play a role in Yisro's thoughts, in his conclusions. So it's so glaringly absent from every juncture in the beginning of the parsha. It can only really be because, as seems to be, it hasn't happened yet. What's interesting is the Tur, in his Perush on the Torah, in addition to the Balaturim, which is very often gematrias and the like, the Tur has a Parshanut Perush on the Torah, Perush HaTor HaOruch. And he sides with the Ramban, and he advances an argument quite different than the Ramban. For the Ramban, it's all about, you can see from the Psukim, if it's not there, it can only be because it hadn't happened yet. The Torah just mentions another point, which for him is quite a compelling point. It can't be that Yisro, or if you say that Yisro came to Moshe after Matan Torah, it turns out the only two Jews who were not present at the giving of the Torah were Moshe's sons. Because Yisro brought them with him, Tzipora. So, and the Torah mentions this as inconceivable. It can't be countenanced. Moshe's wife, the Rebbetzin, and his two sons are the only people who were not there at Matan Torah. It can't be. Okay. Now, Ramban has some answering to do. Because again, we saw the Ibn Ezra had a number of proofs that Yisro came after Matan Torah, says Ramban. Let us see. The first question was, in Pasuk K, it says Yisro came to meet them at Har Sinai. That sounds like they're already there. That sounds like the beginning of Perek Yud Ches of Yisro happened after they'd already arrived at Sinai, not where it's written. What about that? Well, says Ramban, and here he takes a very good look at this Pasuk Hay, and let us take a good look as well. Every word here makes a difference. Vayavo Yisro Chosein Moshe Ubanav v'ishto el Moshe. So Yisro came, right, with Moshe's sons and wife, el Moshe, el Hamidbar, to the desert. Asher hu chone sham, where he was encamped. Har ha'elokim, the mountain of God. Those final two words, Har ha'elokim, if you try and read the pasuk in a fluid way, they're disjointed. Because they really are further elucidation of Hamidbar, specifically where in the Midbar? Har Elokim. If that's the case, they should have been put next to the words Har Elokim, because that's really where they are. But the Midbar in Har Elokim, in the Midbar. The Pasuk should have said, Vayavo, Yisro, Chosen, Moshe, etc., El Hamidbar, Har Elokim, Ashehu Chonesham. You can't mention a place, then mention Moshe being there, and then mention another place. It's syntactically awkward. What about that? And another question, says Ramban. What happens next? What's the next pasuk? Vav. Vayomer el Moshe Ani chosencha yisro ba'elecha. I'm coming towards you. I'm on the way. Ishtecha v'shnei banayima. Your wife and your two, and her two sons. Now, Pasuk Vav is written after Pasuk He. The message that he's arriving is written after the Pasuk that describes him arriving. Pasuk He is already there. Pasuk He says, Yisro came to Moshe. And then the next Pasuk says, and he told him, I'm on the way. Well, you're here. You're more than on the way. You finished. So the Pasukim are reversed. Indeed, we should note, parenthetically to note, Ibn Ezra, true to form, says Pasuk Vav, when he sent him a message, Vayom El Moshe, Ukvar Omer El Moshe, and he had already said, Ibn Ezra was quite prepared to see the events of Pasuk Vav as describing something that happened before the events of Pasuk He. Ramban is not prepared for that. Therefore, what's the way forward? So Ramban says something very interesting. Har Sinai, Har Har Elokim, where is it in relation to Yisro? It happens to be that it's very close by. Har Sinai is next to Midian. How do we know this? We have already seen it. For earlier on in Parshas Shemos, Perek Gimel, as Moshe is tending Yisro's sheep, he finds his way to Har Sinai. That's where the burning bush was. It's not far from Midian. How far can you get with a flock of sheep? It's nearby. Vayavo el Har Elokim Chareva. And in fact, Har Sinai is between Midian and where the Bnei Yisrael were in Rephidim. Now, we have a principle in Lashon HaKodesh, the way Psukim express themselves, which is kedai to refer to. Namely, if you ever have a Pasuk which mentions two objects, but only one verb, that verb is qualifying both objects. It covers both of them. It's mentioned once, but it refers to both of them. It's as if it's mentioned twice. It qualifies both of them. What's known in the parlance as Moshech Atzmo, the Acher Imo. It draws it after itself and also something else with it. And what that means, without elaborating with any other examples, let's just get to the case at hand. In Pasuk He, there's only one verb, Vayovo. Yisro came. But there's two places. The first place mentioned is Hamidbar, and the second place mentioned is Har HaElokim. And what is the meaning of this? The Pasuk, it's as if the Pasuk is saying, Vayavo el Hamidbar, Vayavo el Har HaElokim. Meaning that Yisro, he came towards the Midbar, where Moshe was. But then the Pasuk goes back and tells us that he didn't actually get to Moshe. Vayavo el Har HaElokim. He journeyed towards Moshe. He arrived at Har HaElokim. At that point, which is a midpoint, not exactly a midpoint, but it's between Midian and Moshe. At that point, Pasuk Vav, Vayomer Moshe, sends a message to Moshe, I'm coming. In other words, you see from the fact that he sends a message that he's coming in Pasuk Vav, and in Pasuk He hasn't arrived yet, which means that saying he came to the Midbar is a general statement. Specifically, he only got as far as Midbar Sinai before he sent the message that he's coming. And in fact, in Pasuk Zion, it states, Vayetze Moshe likras chosno. Moshe actually went out to meet him. So what happened was Moshe, as the order of the Psukim seemed to indicate, was with the Jewish people in Rephidim. Yisro came from Midian to Har Sinai, sends a message to Moshe, I'm coming, but Moshe went out to meet him, which is very interesting because Moshe and whoever went with him actually went out to Har Sinai to greet Yisro, but then brought him back to Rephidim, which is where the Jewish people were encamped. And subsequently, they all moved to Har Sinai. And therefore, says Ramban, do not take the reference of Har HaElokim as telling us that the entire Jewish people were already encamped there, but rather that was the halfway point that Yisro got to before they took him to Rephidim, and later on, in one Perek's time, they will all in time move to Har Sinai. So, the Parshanut discussions here are quite involved. And what about the other questions of Ibn Ezra. Ramban actually does not address them, but the Abarbanel does. And with regard to the question of how can Moshe be teaching the Jewish people Torah if the Torah hasn't yet been given? Well, says Abarbanel, if you know your Gemara, Maseches Sanhedrin, Daf Nun Hey, quoted by Rashi, the Jewish people at this stage, before Matan Torah, had not been given the Torah in its entirety, but they had been given some halachas of the Torah, specifically the area of Mishpat, to a significant degree, as in a place called Mara. They came to Mara in last week's Parsha, after they left Yam Suf, and there the Pasuk says, well-known Pasuk, Sham Samlo Chok U'Mishpat. There Hashem gave them Chok U'Mishpat, Chukim U'Mishpatim. What are the Chukim? Some say it's Shabbos, some say Kibbut Ave'im, some say Parah Aduma. Mishpat, says the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Dinim. And therefore, says Abarbanel, if you're wondering, is there any corpus of Torah law that they are already aware of before Matan Torah? Indeed there is, and that may well be what Moshe was referring to when he says they come with me with the Shilas, and I tell them, based on what I know so far. What about the final question of the Ibn Ezra? Namely, that, which is a nuanced question, it's a delicate question. It says they brought Kabbalas and doesn't say they built the Mizbeach. Doesn't that mean that they are at Har Sinai already? That's where the Mizbeach was? Says Abarbanel, no. Indeed, as the Pasuk states, they were in Rephidim. But then the question is, so then why doesn't it say they built the Mizbeach? So the Abarbanel answers in a disarmingly simple way. Have a look at the penultimate pasuk of Parshas Bishalach. The final section discusses the war between Yisrael and Amalek, and then in Perek Yud Zayin, pasuk Tesvav, it says, "Vayiven Moshe Mizbeach, Vayikra Shemo Hashem Nisi." And therefore, says Abarbanel, it's almost a wonderment on the Ibn Ezra. You're wondering where was the Mizbeach. It's in the Pasuk. There's a Mizbeach in Rephidim. The Pasuk doesn't really tell us what happened with it, but if you're wondering, was there a Mizbeach? There absolutely was. Moshe built one. So these are some of the major points that are discussed between Ramban, Ibn Ezra, before, afterwards. And what's interesting is, if you talk about the question of before Matan Torah or after Matan Torah, there only seem to be two possibilities, either before or afterwards. But do not be surprised to hear that there is a third opinion. How can there be? The Ramban considers, and this is possibly Rashi's opinion as well, that there are a number of aspects of Yisro's visit that are mentioned in Perek Yud Ches. When we say that the Psukim are in chronological order, that is to say, it would happen before Matan Torah, it does not necessarily mean that everything in Perek Yud Ches happened before Matan Torah. It is sufficient that the primary aspects of the initial aspects mentioned in the Perek happened before Matan Torah. Should you find references to other things, those further things may well have happened after Matan Torah, but that's okay. And the reason why, says Ramban, is that when the Torah presents something, it will see it through. If it's a topic, it will conclude. Even if the concluding aspects of the topic happened afterwards, which means that if there are three parts to Yisro's visit, for example, we'll see details in a moment, perhaps part one happened before Matan Torah. Maybe part three happened afterwards. Maybe even part two happened afterwards, but they will all be mentioned beforehand, having begun the Torah finishes the topic. And the truth is, this is something that is undeniably happens in the Torah. We've seen it in last week's Parsha. Perek Tet Zayin is the chapter that deals with the eating of the man. Well, when did the Jewish people eat the man? When it fell, as they came out of Mitzrayim, beginning on the 15th of Iyar. Okay, that may be so. But if we have a look at the end of Perek Tet Zayin, Pasuk Lamed Gimel, Vayomer Moshe El Aaron, Perik Yud Zayin, pardon me, Perik Tet Zayin, Pasuk Lamed Gimel. Moshe says to Aaron, Kach Tzinsenes Achas. Take a flask of man, right? V'sen Shama Meloha Omer Man, put an Omer of man in there. V'hanach Oso Lifnei Hashem, and place it before Hashem. Where is this place that's called before Hashem? Rashi explains, Lifnei Ha'aron, before the Aron. Now, we have a problem. There is no Aron in Parshas B'Shalach. The Aron wasn't built until Parshas Vayakhel. Rashi says, Lifnei Ha'aron, V'lo ne'ma mikrazeh ad shenivna o'el moed. This actually didn't happen until there was a Mishkan, which is much later on, months later. But we're dealing with the man. We've started, so we finish. Most of the Parsha deals with the man. Ela shenichtav kan b'parsha saman. So we see that the Torah will finish and add concluding elements of a topic, even if those concluding elements didn't happen at the time. And if that's not enough, the one that will clinch it for sure is the next Pasuk. Pasuk Lamed Hei, Uvenei Yisrael Achlu Es Haman Arba'im Shana. The Jewish people ate man for 40 years. I think we'll all agree that they did not eat the man for 40 years before then moving from Rephidim to Har Sinai. They weren't there for 40 years. It's an overarching reference to the entirety of their stay. That didn't happen before the next thing happened, but it's the concluding element of the man. And therefore, says Abarbanel, in the same way that we see the Torah will finish off a topic with the man, so too the original arrival of Yisro was before Matan Torah. In that he sides with the Ramban, but the final aspects, for example, that the parak concludes by saying that Moshe, he sent, well, I'm sure in a nice way, I'd better to read the pasuk than actually just to say in our words, but Perik Yud Ches, Pasuk Kaf Zayin, Vayishalach Moshe Es Chosno, Vayelech Lo El Arzo. Moshe sent his father-in-law away. Now, in Parshas Balosecha, we will find that Yisro is still there. Because in Parshas Balosecha, Moshe says, Nosim Anachnu, we're going, come with us. Yisro says, no, I want to go back to my home. And there's a discussion between them. So Yisro is clearly still there, as they're, even when they leave Har Sinai. But he was sent away in the end of Perek Yud Ches, says Rashi on this pasuk. That happened afterwards. That's a concluding element. And indeed, it is debated amongst the Mefarshim as to whether the whole discussion of appointing judges, Sarei Alofim, Sarei Meir, is that also something that happened after Matan Torah? It could be. As surely, maybe it's just Torah's Hashlama. It's just concluding the topic. Or perhaps that's something that happened before and just this final point of sending him away. So these are some of the major highlights of this discussion. And as I said, not important to know, not only for the positions of Rishonim, but the way that they force us to consider, you know, each and every one of the psukim exactly in this light. That's always, of course, of great benefit. So, from here, of course, we cannot neglect to move on to the Aseres Hadibros, which is in Perek Kaf. And I'd like to take a look at Perek Kaf Pasuk Ches. That is the mitzvah of Zohar es Yom HaShabbos Lekacho. Well, it's the Pasuk is well known. It's Kiddush on Shabbos morning. Zohar es Yom HaShabbos, remember the Shabbos to keep it holy, to make it holy. Now, interestingly, the word Zohar is not so easy to translate. We translate the word Zohar as remember. Well, remember as a command would not be Zohar. It would be Zichor. Zichor is the imperative. Zichor Yemos Olam. What is Zohar if it isn't an imperative? Rashi will help us. It says Rashi, Zohar, Lashon Pa'ulhu. It's a kind of, it's an infinitive, it's an abstract. Zohar literally means remembering. Kamo Achol V'Shaso, that type of thing. Eating and drinking. or halochu vacho, walking and crying. These are quotations from Sukkya. Okay. So grammatically we've understood that it's an infinitive, really. V'chein pisrono. And what does it mean? Grammar aside, what is the mitzvah? This is what it means. Tenu lev liskor tamid es yom haShabbos. Keep it in mind, or keep it in heart, to remember Shabbos constantly. Meaning, she'im nizdamin lecha chepetz yofeh, if you come across a nice item, te'mazminu leShabbos, keep it for Shabbos. That's very nice. That means it could be Monday or Wednesday, but you see something nice, have Shabbos in mind, because that makes Shabbos special. Now, what's very interesting is how these two aspects of Rashi go together. Rashi's given us a grammatical comment on the word Zachor, and he's given us a halachic presentation of the mitzvah. The two are connected. The halachic position comes from the grammar. What do we mean by that? Rashi noted that you don't have a classic zechor, which is a command. Mitzvahs are commands, and they tend to be in command form. Here, the Torah didn't say zechor, which is the imperative. It said zachor. So really the question is, but there's no doubt that it's a mitzvah. I mean, the Torah isn't just talking about remembering. It's telling you to remember. So now the question is, what to make of a mitzvah? It is undoubtedly, and contextually, a mitzvah that is not phrased as a mitzvah. It's phrased as an infinitive. Why would the Torah not give it the command form, but rather this more unqualified form, zachor, remembering? The answer, says Rashi, is because that's the nature of the mitzvah. It's a fascinating comment of Rashi. In other words, it is a mitzvah. It's not phrased as a mitzvah in order to tell you even more about the mitzvah. Namely, as surely as grammatically the word zachor means remembering. When? Doesn't say. Grammatically, it's unqualified. It's unbound in any way. Why? Because the mitzvah of remembering Shabbos is not qualified in any way. It's not restricted at all. Why not? Because it applies the whole time. As Rashi says, remember it constantly. So the constant remembering comes from this zachor form that the Torah used to communicate the mitzvah. So that's very interesting how a knowledge of dikduk can lead you to a new understanding of how a mitzvah works. Okay. Now, Rashi gave us an example, and Ramban will take issue with Rashi quite pointedly. Rashi says the example is, it's the middle of the week, you see something nice for Shabbos, you see something nice, have it for Shabbos. Says Ramban, there is a background to this comment of Rashi. This matter is discussed in the Gemara. It's a well-known discussion. And it concerns no less than Hillel and Shammai. It's a Gemara in Maseches Beitza on Daf Tet Zayin Amud Aleph. And let us see what it says. Tanya, it's quoted in a Braisa, taught in a Braisa. Amru Alav al Shammai Hazokin. They said about Shammai the elder, Kol Yomav Haya Ocha Lichvod Shabbos. All his days, he would eat in honor of Shabbos. Now, that takes some doing. How did he do that? I mean, the 6 days of the week that are not Shabbos. As follows. Motza behema no'a. If he found a nice animal or a nice meat. Omer, zula Shabbos. So wherever he was in the week, he would say, oh, this is for Shabbos. Motza acher, that could be on Monday. But then on Wednesday, if motza acheres no'a himena, he found an even nicer animal, so then Maniches Ashnia, so then he would leave over the second one, V'ocheles HaRishonah, the one that he was saving for Shabbos, but if he found something nicer, so then the nicer one he would leave for Shabbos. Which means that he constantly has Shabbos in mind. The nicest of what he has, he's saving for Shabbos. Okay, very nice. Sounds familiar. That's Rashi. Aval, says the Gemara, Hillel Hazokin Midacheres Haisalo. But Hillel did things differently. He had a different way of going about things. Shekol ma'asa l'shem shamayim. All of his deeds were for the sake of heaven. Shenemar Baruch Hashem Yom Yom. Baruch Hashem every day. Why wait till Shabbos? You found something nice? Eat it today. Aye, today is Tuesday. Yes, Tuesday is also a day. Baruch Hashem Yom Yom. The Pasuk says, bless Hashem every day. So, that's an interesting machlokus, because it sounds like Hillel would not save it for Shabbos. He would, no need to say, you can do other things on Shabbos, but you found something nice, eat it today. Monday's also a day. So, says Ramban, I have a deep issue with Rashi now. Because if there's anything we know about how to paskan a halacha, we know that when it comes to Hillel and Shammai, we follow Hillel. We don't follow Shammai. Rashi's explanation of the mitzvah is on the wrong side of the law. He's explained according to Shammai. That's not the side that everybody else is on by now. And this has troubled the Ramban greatly. And the Farshi Rashi, of course, move in to defend and explain Rashi. How can it be? He's passing in like Shammai. And Rashi knows, of course, exactly what Hillel and Shammai hold. Rashi wrote the commentary on the Gemara also, so he's well aware of Hillel and Shammai. How can this be? The Nachlas Yaakov, Rabbi Yaakov Selnik, one of the great Mefarshi Rashi of the Acharonim, he explains Rashi as follows. Firstly, we really need to understand Hillel. For what are we saying? I probably identify with Shammai better. Shammai says Shabbos is a special day, treat it as such. You found something special, keep it for Shabbos. And Hillel says, no, Baruch Hashem Yom Yom, it's fine. Don't worry about Shabbos. In the meanwhile, it's Monday. With all due respect to Monday, it's a lot of things, but it's not Shabbos. I mean, how can Hillel, you know, at the expense really of Shabbos? It's very nice. But, if the rabbi has a special seat in the shul, so you can't say, well, everyone's going to sit there because v'haftar recha kamocha. It's very nice, but not at the expense of of Shabbos. Says the Nachlas Yaakov, amazingly, if you wish to understand Rashi's position on the Chumash, look at Rashi on the Gemara. For Rashi, when he describes Hillel, he adds some golden words. When the Gemara says that Hillel would eat, he would eat l'shem shamayim, baruch Hashem yom yom, boteach shetizdamin lo no'ah l'shabbos. Hillel trusted in Hashem that if I eat this nice thing today, because I hold that it's a mitzvah to eat l'shem shamayim, and every day is special, it's nice, what about Shabbos? He had bitachon. I'm doing a mitzvah. I won't come to harm through a mitzvah. I'm going to eat this now, and Hashem will send me something nice for Shabbos. So, what's happening is, the difference between Shammai and Hillel is that Shammai, he didn't rely on the fact that he would find something nicer for Shabbos. If he found something nice, he's remembering Shabbos. Hillel also remembers Shabbos. How? Because if he finds something nice, he eats it today. But he remembers Shabbos as he's doing so, because he's saying, this is nice, but today's important. What about Shabbos? More important? Hashem will help me. So he's also remembering Shabbos as he eats this nice thing on Monday. What is the point of departure between Hillel and Shammai? The point of departure is, Hillel, because of Baruch Hashem Yom Yom, he has a much more, without oversimplifying, he has a much more embracing view of physical life. So maybe it's not Shabbos, but Monday's also a day, and it's also important. And if one could do that, the Shem Shamayim, it has the status of a mitzvah. That's where Hillel and Shammai part ways. Shammai doesn't consider eating to be a mitzvah unless it's Shabbos. If it's Monday, it's not a mitzvah. It's just a necessity. But that's not where your Yiddishkeit will be found at all. So there's no reason to assume that Hashem will help you to find something for Shabbos. You ruined it by having the Shabbos food on Monday. And you have no excuse. Because why should you have something nice? You just need to keep body and soul together until Shabbos comes along. Then it's the mitzvah to eat. So you don't have license to eat the nice food during the week. But that's part of his vision as to what it means to eat during the week. Whereas for Hillel, it can become a mitzvah, and if I've been involved in a mitzvah, show me a mitzvah, lo yeda davar ra, I'm doing a mitzvah today, Hashem will help me find something nicer for Shabbos. So that is a fundamental approach question, which reverberates actually throughout Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai in many of their halachic discussions, their relationship with Olam Hazeh. But there is another point, and that is that Rashi told us not only did Hillel consider eating every day to be a mitzvah, which is quite a madrega, but he also had bitachon that Hashem will help him. If he didn't, and Rashi adds that in, it's a critical point. If he didn't trust Hashem that Hashem will send him something, and not everyone has that madrega of bitachon. How do you know? It's Thursday. You found something nice. How do you know that Hashem will help you for Shabbos? Are you so reliant? It's a madrega. Bitachon has many madregas. It's a very personal thing. And therefore, Hillel was on a, not only, it's a product of 2 points now. The approach of Hillel is that every day of the week is a mitzvah, and the madrega of Hillel is that he can rely on that Hashem will send him something nice for Shabbos. But what's fascinating is the Gemara describes the two practices of Hillel and Shammai, not the practices of Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai. As if to say, not everyone in Beis Hillel was on the madrega of Hillel, as surely as not everyone of Shammai was on the madrega of Shammai. So you have a very interesting situation. Because if you partook of Beis Hillel, and you paskin like Beis Hillel, but there's a certain practice that needs the madrega of Hillel himself, you may well have found a number of Beis Hillel niks, Beis Hillel people, who had no choice but to act like Shammai, because they can't presume to be on the madrega of Hillel himself. And what's even more fascinating is, we move from, shall we say, parshanut, into the world of halacha, because the Or Zeruah, who's one of the great Ashkenazi Rishonim, Rabbeinu Yitzchak Mivienna, the 1200s, the Or Zeruah says, if a person sees during the week some nice food, he should set it aside for Shabbos. Even though, says the Or Zeruah, this was the practice of Shammai, not of Hillel, and generally speaking, we do not go like Beis Shammai, but because, says Or Zeruah, not everyone is on the madrega of Hillel to follow through really with that bitachon that Hashem will give, and if it's just lip service and you have no license to use it, so even if we paskin like Beis Hillel, we would need to go like Beis Shammai here, and therefore, amazingly, the charge of the Ramban against Rashi is you've paskined against the halacha. In this instance, Rashi is not offside of the halacha; it actually is the halacha, because although we go like Beis Hillel, but even Beis Hillel would follow Shammai in this respect. And the halachic authorities quote the opinion of Shammai as the normative halachic practice. And it began with the Or Zeruah, it then became codified by the Magen Avraham in his commentary to the Shulchan Aruch, and is then quoted in the Mishnah Berurah. So if you're guided in life, as we should be, by the Mishnah Berurah, you open up and you will see that he advises you to act like Shammai. That is the halacha. So Rashi is very much in keeping with the halacha. To go like Hillel would require madrigas that perhaps we may be aspiring to, but not holding by. And that's important. One needs to know exactly where one stands. You know, there is a practice, widespread, I don't know, there is a practice among some people that when they eat on Shabbos, so they say, before they eat, they say, L'chvod Shabbos Kodesh, in honor of Shabbos. Okay, so there was a simple Jew, and he saw this practice, he wants to do the right thing, so he came to a rabbi, and he said, what the rabbi was doing, Lichot Shabbos Kodesh, he said, should I do this? And the rabbi said, certainly, it's a very good thing, Lichot Shabbos Kodesh. But then he came back to his rabbi, and says, when I eat food on Shabbos, should I say Lichot Shabbos Kodesh before I eat? So the rabbi said, well, that depends. What does it depend on? He said, are you eating it in honor of Shabbos? Or not? So this simple Jew said, not really. So the rabbi said, so then don't say it. It's not true. So then he went back to the first rabbi and said, like, my rabbi told me that I had to admit I don't really eat in honor of Shabbos. I mean, not totally, so, or not predominantly. So he told me not to say it. But the first rabbi said, but you should. You should be eating lechvod Shabbos. So go back to your rabbi. So he goes back to his rabbi and says, well, this rabbi said I should be eating lechvod Shabbos. So doesn't that mean I should say it? So the rabbi said, okay, here's what you do. Before you eat food on Shabbos, say the following. I should be eating this lechvod Shabbos. That is 100% true. That you can say without a doubt. And it's true. And this is the magic formula of knowing what there is to aspire to, but not necessarily deluding ourselves that we're together with Hillel just yet. It's very interesting to consider that the Ramban was so bothered by Rashi's Peirush. Again, just to bring ourselves back to where it all began. Rashi says, Zachor means remember Shabbos constantly, and Ramban says, what do you mean? That's like Shammai, how can you say that? But there seems to be a premise behind the Ramban's question, namely that Rashi's comments on the Pasuk within the context of his Peirush on the Torah need to be consistent with the Halacha as we paskin it. Well, that's not necessarily the case. For Rashi's job is to explain Pshuto Shel Mikra. It often happens that the halachic position is not based on Pshuto Shel Mikra, but rather on Medrash Halacha, which is not Rashi's field, predominantly, in his Peirush on the Torah. And no one knows this better than the Ramban. No one learned Rashi better than the Ramban. And there are many examples throughout Rashi's Peirush where the explanation that he gives to the Pasuk is not the way we pass in the Halacha. And there's a reason why the Pasuk said it that way, and there's a reason why the Halacha is not in keeping with the simple reading of the words. Each one teaches you something. But Rashi's job is not to give you a Halachic commentary, it's to give you a Pshat commentary. So it's very interesting that the Ramban, although he's seen Rashi so many times do this, it's common that the Peirush that he gives is not necessarily what you'll find in the Shulchan Aruch, right? And so be it. But in this instance, he took a strong exception to Rashi. It's like Hillel, like Shammai, not Hillel. Ramban felt it was unacceptable. It's also interesting that certainly the way we understand the Halacha, Rashi's comment on Zochar Yom HaShabbos Lekadshu, aside from everything else, seems to have departed from what the Gemara says. The Gemara's explanation of Zochar Yom HaShabbos Lekadsho is that it refers to Kiddush, the mitzvah of Kiddush on Shabbos, specifically on Friday night. That's what Zochar. In fact, that's the Zochar is a positive mitzvah of the 248. It refers to Kiddush. That's where we learn that although it's a time-bound mitzvah, it's unusual because women are normally exempt from time-bound positive mitzvahs, but Kiddush, they are 100% as obligated as men because of Zochar v'Shamor b'dibur echad ne'emu. It's we may be familiar with it from Lecha Dodi. It's not just a nice idea. It has halachic implications. Zochar and Shamor. Zochar is the positive mitzvah of Kiddush. Shamor is keeping Shabbos, that's the avoiding malacha, and they're fused, they're equated, which yields a halacha. Whoever is enjoined and obligated not to do malacha is also obligated to make Kiddush, and hence everyone now is involved in Kiddush, is obligated in Kiddush. This is the Gemara's comment on the word Zochar Shema Shabbos Lekadsho, and that, aside from Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai, seems very different than Rashi's Peirush. It's not during the week. The time to fulfill the mitzvah of Zochar is on Shabbos itself, it seems, according to the Gemara. Once again, in that respect, Rashi is not like the Gemara. Just to our final one or two moments, to refer to a word that often goes unnoticed, I think, in the Pasuk of Zochar Yom HaShabbos Lekadsho, because Zochar is so full and Yom HaShabbos. And what does Lekadsho mean? Remember the day of Shabbos, Lekadsho, to make it holy. That's an interesting thing to say. Specifically because, as we know, the conclusion of the brachos in Kiddush and in the middle bracha of the Amidah on Shabbos and Yom Tov are different. The conclusion of the bracha for Shabbos is Baruch Atah Hashem Mekadesh HaShabbos. That's it. When it comes to Yom Tov, we say Baruch Atah Hashem Mekadesh Yisrael VaHazmanim. So we mention Yisrael at the conclusion of the Yom Tov bracha, but not of Shabbos. Why? The Gemara explains in the seventh parak of Maseches Brachos, the difference between them is because Hashem is Mekadesh the Shabbos. It's Kaddish regardless of the Jewish people. Hashem is Mekadosh Shabbos. We need to keep it. Yom Tov, however, Yisrael are Mekadosh the Yom Tov because they're Mekadosh the Chodesh. And Kiddush HaChodesh is what allows for Yom Tov to exist. And therefore, when it comes to Yom Tov, Mekadosh Yisrael v'Hazmanim, because Hashem is Mekadosh Yisrael, and Yisrael are Mekadosh the Zmanim. Now, if that's the case, and it is, then let's come back to our Pasuk, because we've just learned from the Halacha, from those Brachos, that Hashem is Mekadosh Shabbos, not the Jewish people. But then back to this Pasuk, which says, Zochor Yom HaShabbos, Lekatcho, remember the Shabbos, Lekatcho, to make it holy. It sounds like we are told, commanded to be Mekadosh HaShabbos, unlike the Brachos. And to make things more complicated, we say in the Nusach of Musaf, Am Mekadosh Shvi. Am Mekadosh Shvi means the people that sanctify the seventh day. So what is the way forward here? Who is Mekadosh the Shabbos? Or Hashem is Mekadosh HaShabbos, as we say Mekadosh HaShabbos, or are we Mekadosh HaShabbos, Zohar Shem HaShabbos Lekacho, Am Mekadosh Shvi. So Mefarshim explain that the essential Kedusha of Shabbos has nothing to do with the fact that the Jewish people made it so. Shabbos pre-existed the Jewish people, it's not contingent upon the Jewish people. If the Beis Din will get together and decide that Rosh Chodesh is tomorrow, it's tomorrow, even if the new moon is today. But if today is the seventh day of the week, and the Beis Din get together and say, Shabbos is tomorrow, by this time tomorrow, they'll be out of a job. Mm. They're not licensed to say that. Nothing can move Shabbos. It's not their mandate to be Mekadosh Shabbos. Quite true. The basic Kedusha of Shabbos is there. But Lekadosh means sometimes the Jewish people have a relationship with something that as they connect and they keep it properly, they activate its Kedusha. Dugma Ladavar, the Jewish people have a land called Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael is holy even if the Jewish people aren't there, but it's more holy when the Jewish people are. The intrinsic Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael is even if there would be no Jew living there. But if there's no Jews there and it hasn't been connected with by the presence of the Jewish people, there are many mitzvahs that wouldn't apply. Trumas and Masos and Shemitah are only when the Jewish people are there. They activate the Kedusha which expresses itself in those mitzvahs. Shabbos is to time what Eretz Yisrael is to land. The essential Kedusha is there, but the way the Jewish people relate to Shabbos, that will bring out the Kedusha. And thus we find on the one hand, Hashem is Mekadosh Shabbos. We can't decide which day is the holy day of Shabbos, but we can decide how holy it is to be. And Shabbos is referred to as the Ben Zug of the Jewish people. The Medrash says that Shabbos complained. Every day has Ben Zug. Sunday is Monday, Tuesday is Wednesday, Thursday is Friday. Shabbos has nothing, has no one. Omar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Knesset Yisrael Yeh Ben Zugcha. The Jewish people are your Ben Zug. Now the Jewish people are not a day, but they are the partner for Shabbos because they bring out the best in each other. The Jewish people activate the Kedusha of Shabbos, and Shabbos activates the Kedusha of the Bnei Yisrael. And thus, there's plenty to do on Shabbos, actively, not only reactively, but to be Mekadosh HaShabbos. That's the full mitzvah. Remember the Shabbos. Why? Lekadosho, to sanctify, to bring out its sanctity, and then it brings out the sanctity of the Jewish people. We'll leave it over there.